Well, I wonder, how many of you have ever looked back over your life? I'm not thinking of those occasions when you're in a near car accident and everything kind of flashes past, but where you're somewhat, maybe a little bit introspective, but thinking about things that have occurred, or maybe thinking about a decision or an action that you wish you could have reversed. Can you think of anything like that? I suspect most of us can think of a thing or two, or three or four, or whatever. They are often kind of these defining things in our lives that distinguish good decisions and bad decisions. And, well, we're not the only ones to have to deal with that. There are many biblical characters that have had defining marks in their lives as well. I think of Moses, and you think of that Moses was a great biblical character, and he had many high points and great accomplishments, but he also killed a man that when found out he had to flee the country for 40 years. He also struck the rock when he was supposed to speak to it and then was banned from entering the promised land, and I'm sure he perhaps may have thought he would like to have gone back and changed some of those responses. I think of David, who was also a man of many accomplishments, but he also experienced some indiscretions that were of a very serious nature and had devastating results and long-lasting consequences. And I'm sure he would like to have rethought some of those things and not done what he had done. And likewise, we can relate to some of those kinds of things. And as we'll see today, Hezekiah also, as we have given some attention to him, he had a great resume in terms of what he had accomplished, many things. He was one of the best kings of Judah, of the southern kingdom. And yet he also failed at a very strategic time with some devastating results. So we're going to be looking at Isaiah chapter 39 today, and it presents a serious indiscretion of Hezekiah, the man who was known for so many positive reforms in the nation. Now, as we think about this chapter, just a couple of things to be reminded of. It's the last chapter of the first section of Isaiah. Generally, we look at Isaiah and we see it can be divided into two parts, somewhat comparable to our English scriptures, where we've got the first 39 chapters of Isaiah compare somewhat to the 39 books of the Old Testament, and then the 27 books of the New Testament that compare at least numerically to the 27 remaining chapters of the book of Isaiah. And so there's that breakdown there, but it's also a pivot. Chapters 38 and 39 kind of move, and we've noted that those four chapters in this section right here, 36 through 39, are a historical interlude, and they kind of note a change from a focus and a concern about Assyria and its power and its influence in the land and everything that related to that, and then to a concern about Babylon and the future implication and the judgment that was going to be associated with Babylon as it relates to the southern kingdom of Judah. And so this brief chapter, it's only just a few verses, is going to give some insight on Judah's demise, but also in the process, it gives us some very practical lessons on how to deal with various circumstances in life. So hopefully we will see that as we give some attention to these details. So the first thing to note is beware of the power of positive press. That's got a nice ring to it, doesn't it? The power of positive press. Usually you think positive press, how can you beat that? But there also can be a hazard associated with that, as we will note in a moment. So let's look at the first couple of verses here. At that time, Merodach-Baladan, the son of Baladan, king of Babylon, sent letters and a present to Hezekiah, for he had heard that he had been sick and had recovered. Now that sounds like a sweet thing to do. I mean, isn't that nice? It's so thoughtful, considerate, or not. And Hezekiah was pleased with them and showed them the house of his treasures, the silver and gold, the spices and precious ointment, and all his armory, all that was found among his treasures. There was nothing in his house or in all his dominion that Hezekiah did not show them. That was so thoughtful of Hezekiah to do that, wasn't it? Or not? There is danger in undiscerning reception of praise or of giving attention or whatever other terminology you want to use. And that's what we see in this particular verse. This introduces a renewed significance of Babylon. Now, we recognize Babylon had been noted way back in the book of Genesis and the Tower of Babel associated with that area and so on. But there's a phrase that's used here, at that time. It's tying together the events of this historical interlude. In chapter 38, verse 1, it talked about in those days. And so we see there are several things that were going on about the same time with some overlap, but an ordering of some things as well. And so it kind of indicates, well, there's something else to take into account here that's going on at this time. And this verse, as this verse explains, the events that follow happened after Hezekiah had recovered from his illness, which was referenced in chapter 38, verse 5. This was most likely during the year 701 BC, before Sennacherib's threat of invasion of Jerusalem, which was noted in chapters 36 and 37. And so again, we saw in this particular section several events that are referenced and that have significance. Now here we also have reference to a name, Merodach-Baladan, probably not one you want to use in your baby book. It means literally, the god Marduk has given a son. And this was the ruler who was kind of coming to power and having some influence, and he raised the power of Babylon at this time to be to the place of actually being able to threaten Assyria to some degree, and would eventually overthrow Assyria, at least Assyrian dominance in the ancient Near East area. He was the first king of Babylon in this context, in a formal sense, and he led the nation during two particular periods, about 721 to 710 BC, and then about 703 to 702 BC. In 710 BC, Sargon, another Babylonian leader, ousted him, but then in 702 BC, the Assyrians defeated Merodach-Baladan. So there's some interplay going on here, some vying for power in the area. So after this defeat, Merodach-Baladan continued to foster revolt against the Assyrian nation in the Fertile Crescent area that where the Tigris and Euphrates rivers run through, and where there's been a civilization that's been thriving and central to a lot of things for a long time. And so his motivation comes out when we see what his situation was. He was trying to cultivate a relationship with Hezekiah by sending letters and a present regarding Hezekiah's recovery from his illness. And he was doing this so that he could have some additional connection to be able to stand in the way of Assyria and perhaps ultimately overthrow, which ultimately would happen. Some have also noted that there may have been an interest in the sundial incident or the movement of the shadow back on the wall, and whatever may have been involved with that, because any of the astronomical kinds of things were of interest to the Babylonians in general. And there's an allusion in 2 Chronicles 32:31 that we'll see in a little bit that seems to highlight that. But the point for our observation is that Babylon seemed to be strategically building relationships for the purpose of suppressing Assyrian influence and power. So, now that's not particularly good news for Hezekiah, because Hezekiah thought that it was all about him. And it was probably not all about him. He was just an incidental player in the equation, and his situation just gave an opportunity for Babylon to kind of weasel in just a little bit. So that gives us the observation that the apparent thinking of Hezekiah was mostly naivety. He really didn't know what was going on, although he may have thought that he may be building an alliance for good for the future, because he was at this time rather concerned about the threat of Assyria. And if Babylon wanted to come along and be an ally, well, he could live with that as well. So Hezekiah received the Babylonian delegation rather warmly. And since they were expressing sympathy and concern for him, and they were expressing gratefulness that he had recovered and was doing well, and because they had a shared concern for the power and influence of Assyria, and perhaps had some shared antagonism toward Assyria, that was okay as well. But then there's the question of showing him all, or showing the delegation from Babylon, all of his wealth and his military resources. And there should be a question that comes to mind. Of course, we're, as they call it, Monday morning quarterbacks. We're looking back and we're saying, well, that was a really dumb idea. And we would want to say to Hezekiah, what on earth were you thinking? You just don't do that. But Hezekiah was kind of drawn in by the attention and just felt compelled to show everything off. And not a good thing. One teeny tiny little indiscretion, so it would seem. So it seems that in the process, Hezekiah was wanting to gain communicate some level of affluence or power or whatever, so that Babylon would think well of him. And that's what it sounds like, something that people are inclined to do. We want people to think well of us, and that's what we kind of tend to do, and that's what he seemed to do at this time. And so he was comfortable enough with this delegation and with what their presented concern was, that he made himself and his nation completely vulnerable. And he may have also missed an opportunity to communicate something of the glory of God in the process. Couldn't he have said, look what God did for me, rather than saying, look at all my stuff? I mean, isn't there just a little bit of a difference there? I mean, don't we fall into that same thing sometimes? Look what God has done for me, or look what I've provided for myself. Beware. That's a concern that we ought to have as well, and we ought to learn from this, maybe not to do that sort of thing. So he essentially gave away his nation in one seemingly very small act of indiscretion. And he apparently thought he was important enough to be sought out. I mean, they went to all the trouble to travel all the way from Babylon just to see him and to give him a present and to say just how glad they were that he's doing well. But I suspect that the Babylonians didn't think as highly of him as he thought they did. They were simply being expedient for their own benefit. Isn't that the way things are? There's another interesting observation in the text in 2 Chronicles 32:31, which says, "However, regarding the ambassadors of the princes of Babylon, whom they sent to him to inquire about the wonder that was done in the land." Now, was the wonder his healing, or was the wonder the movement of the shadow, or was it kind of blended into all one thing? It's not particularly stated, but it does make you wonder about that. But it says here, God withdrew from him, which suggests that probably Hezekiah wasn't thinking about God, he was thinking about himself, in order to test him, that he might know all that was in his heart. Now, there's a rather potent lesson for all of us. What does the Lord bring into our lives to test us in terms of people outside of us that have some point of contact with us, where we might be drawn in by some pretentious flattery or some well-intentioned praise that focuses attention on ourselves instead of on the Lord? We are reminded in Romans 12:3 that we ought not to think more highly of ourselves than we ought to think. And it seems that Hezekiah was pulled into that kind of thinking, and we are then reminded to beware lest we find ourselves in a comparable situation. Then moving on, verses 3 and 4, we read, "Then Isaiah the prophet went to King Hezekiah and said to him, 'What did these men say? And from where did they come to you?' So Hezekiah said, 'They came to me from a far country, from Babylon.'" Like, it's no big deal. "And he said, 'What have they seen in your house?' So Hezekiah answered, 'They have seen all that is in my house. There is nothing among my treasures that I have not shown them.'" And about this time, we should be thinking, is this starting to catch on in Hezekiah's thinking? Like, why? What's the matter with that? Did I do something wrong? Maybe. There is value in probing questions for greater clarity. And so this is Isaiah's inquiry regarding this particular contact. Isaiah used strategic questions to help Hezekiah think about the implications of what had occurred. As Isaiah was apparently prompted by the Spirit to confront Hezekiah because of Hezekiah's failure to trust the Lord in this situation, rather he's focusing on himself. And so he politely asked about the visit of the Babylonian ambassadors, which would be a reasonable thing to do. Isaiah was a prophet. Hezekiah was a king. Isaiah was very much in the middle of the political things going on at this time, so there was pretty common communication among them, and Isaiah was the ambassador from the Lord that was kind of in the middle of things here. And so it's quite logical he's going to ask him, you know, what was this all about? I see somebody is showing up here from out of town, and just by the way, what was that all about? And the question should have given Hezekiah opportunity to think about and to verbalize what had actually happened. Now, often we need to do that as well. We need to sort of think through, and sometimes it helps to verbalize. I mean, often it helps for us to write things out because it helps us to think through things, but even just verbalizing something helps us to think about the practical implications or maybe the sinful elements that might elude us otherwise because our self-deception is so prominent and controlling that we can miss the obvious. And so Isaiah is asking these questions to help him think it through. And we probably would do well many times to ask ourselves comparable questions to think, help us think through our sinful thought processes or actions so that we can face them for what they are. Now, the Bible calls that confessing our sin, where we say, okay, Lord, now I'm finally thinking through what I've done and I've really messed up, and so this is my acknowledgement of my sin, and that's what he wants us to do. Hezekiah's responses indicate his failure to see any problem with his actions. He didn't try to hide it. He didn't try to necessarily sugarcoat it. He just said, oh, this is what happened. Yeah, I showed him everything. Wasn't that great? They're nice guys, really, just great people. You know, they just made me feel so comfortable, and I just shared everything with them. And he did try to, obviously, put things in the best light, and so he thought this was okay. It was a good thing. And it may cause us to want to think about our responses to some of the things that we do. Now, obviously, when we do things, we try to put things in the best light, and there's some value in trying to be positive, but there's also some value in being realistic in terms of what are we really doing. And so we need to think about that. And so this is just sort of coming to terms with reality. And it's a good reminder for us to evaluate our actions and to think about our responses as well. Then we see in the next few verses here that we need to beware of the potential for short-sightedness. And there is certainly an element of that communicated in this text, as we'll see. It says in verses 5 through 7, then Isaiah said to Hezekiah, hear the word of the Lord of hosts, the Lord of armies, the armies of the angels. Behold, the days are coming when all that is in your house and what your fathers have accumulated until this day shall be carried to Babylon. Nothing shall be left, says the Lord. And they shall take away some of your sons who will descend from you, whom you will beget, and they shall become eunuchs in the palace of the king of Babylon. Now, I suspect that Hezekiah's jaw dropped just a little bit when this happened, because he may not have been thinking of how serious this was, just like we may not be thinking about how serious some of the things that we find ourselves involved with and needing to be confronted with that. So there's good reason for confronting indiscretion. We need to do it in ourselves, and Isaiah certainly was taking his cue from the Lord here. Isaiah provided an authoritative word from the Lord because there is a standard that we are all to live by. And Isaiah was acting in an authoritative capacity. It wasn't just his words. He made it very clear, this is what the Lord says. And that was his job, as it were, to be that communicator to people from the Lord. So he emphasized the need to hear and to pay attention, to heed. Hear the word of the Lord. Note this. Take it to heart. And then he's going to reference, behold, or see, or notice this. And we do well to remember that we need to heed the word of the Lord as well. It's not merely the word of man, it's the word of the Lord, so take it to heart. Good reminder for us. He provided a chilling prediction of future pillaging of Judah by Babylon. Now, right about this time, Hezekiah had been struggling with the threat of Assyria right at the doorstep. And the Lord had said when Hezekiah was sick and then recovered that Assyria was not going to capture Jerusalem at this time. And I'm sure about then Hezekiah is going, whew, you know, we dodged that bullet. That's great. And thought, okay, everything's going to be okay. And now he's getting word that, well, guess what? Babylon, this country that you were buddying up with, is going to be the very people, that is going to come and be the demise of the nation. So not good news. And so the text is communicating that Babylon is going to come and take everything that Hezekiah had shown to these ambassadors. And I can just picture in my mind the ambassadors with their little check sheet going, okay, they've got this, they've got this, they've got this. Well, better make, don't forget this little room back behind here where it's got some really good stuff hidden, and on. I mean, maybe making mental notes, or maybe they had their cell phone out and they were, you know, typing in all the stuff. But whatever it was, they may have been making notes about, look at all the cool stuff here. And he's just telling it like it is. Look, it's everywhere. Look at all this stuff. And things were going pretty well in Hezekiah's time, so there was probably quite a bit there. Though we did remember that under Assyria, we had record in, I think it was 1 Kings, 1 or 2 Kings, that the tribute that Hezekiah had to pay was rather heavy under Assyria, and at one point he had to scrape the gold off the doors of the temple in order to pay that. So there may have been some pillaging already at this point, but apparently he had enough yet to show off, and it was enough to impress the Babylonians that there's something here worth coming back for at a later time. And the language that's used here is rather specific and somewhat instructive, because the ambassadors, it's noted, came from Babylon, verse 3, and they would carry everything off to Babylon, verse 6. And Hezekiah had shown them all his stuff, verse 4, and they would take all of this stuff, mentioned twice in verse 6, back to Babylon. So it's very intentional in terms of the terminology that's used here. And this would actually happen, take place, as was predicted by Isaiah here. It would take place in 586 BC when Nebuchadnezzar would come and capture Jerusalem, also referenced in 2 Kings 24 and 25 and 2 Chronicles 36, as well as Jeremiah 20 verse 5. So multiple references indicating the time frame here. So Isaiah's mention now of Babylon as the enemy would likely have been a bit of a shock to Hezekiah. And he's trying to put all of this together. And so he's thinking as all of this is going on. And I'm wondering if he's going, maybe I shouldn't have showed them all my stuff and the stuff of the nation. Maybe starting to rethink things. But one of the observations that we need to make here is we can't put all of this on Hezekiah. He wasn't the only reason why this was all going to happen. He was the defining person that gave Babylon a reason to come back and take everything. But it was the nation as a whole that wasn't living up to the details of the covenant that they were under with the Lord. And so Judah, Jerusalem, they knew what was expected, though they probably tried to put it out of their thinking. But they also knew what had happened to the northern kingdom, to Samaria and the northern 10 tribes. They were taken by Assyria. And that was the end of that part of the nation. They were then diluted and never again had that same power and influence. So this was the practical connection for Babylon's interest in Judah and Jerusalem that would come back to haunt them later. The picture that comes to my mind, to sort of put it in more contemporary terms, it would be like if you took a video of all of the stuff in your house and posted it on Facebook and said, look at all the cool stuff I have. And then you wonder why your house gets broken into and everything taken. I mean, it's kind of the same picture. Or it's right up there with those folks who commit crimes and then they boast about it on Facebook or some other media. It's like, really? Was that a good idea? Probably not. So we, basic lesson here is we need to control our urge to impress, lest it become our undoing. Good reminder. And then the results of Babylon's future sacking of Jerusalem would hit close to home, because there's reference here that the descendants of Hezekiah would be taken captive to Babylon. Now, at the same time, Hezekiah probably didn't have any children at this point, because Manasseh is his son, and he's going to be 12 when he starts to reign, and it's going to be within a year that Hezekiah dies after that. And so he's thinking, oh, so I am going to have a child. So he may have been thinking, oh, maybe there's some good stuff that's going to come through this anyway. And so we have reference to his son who was taken to Babylon, his son Manasseh, 2 Chronicles 33:11. Another later king, also of his heritage, King Jehoiakim, 2 Kings 24:12. He was taken captive to Babylon. Another king in the lineage, Zedekiah, 2 Kings 25:7. He was taken to Babylon after he had his sons killed in front of him, and then his eyes put out. And then there were many other of Hezekiah's people of the nation who would have been deported in three deportations that would take place, including Daniel and his friends who were part of that equation as well. So, yeah, there's a lot that's involved here. And so this was going to have incredible implications, not only the 7 years, 70 years of the Babylonian captivity, but many never came back after that, and it had, long-lasting implications. So then we come to the last verse, which is a good one to remember. So Hezekiah said to Isaiah, "The word of the Lord which you have spoken is good." Really? For he said, "At least there will be peace and truth in my days." Now, lest you think, well, we got through this text unscathed, nothing really came through here to convict us of anything. Well, look at this one. There are often short-sighted responses to judgment. Hezekiah recognized the validity of the Lord's responses. Well, he should have, because he should have recognized that the people had been in sin, they had violated the covenant, and they had this coming. And so there's a sense in which he would have just acknowledged, yes, the people deserve this because they're sinners and so on. And there's a part of that that has some legitimacy. And then he was drawn to focus on some positive aspects of the situation. Like, okay, I am going to have some children. That's a positive thing, because he heard that in the process. And he was likely thankful that it wasn't going to happen in his day. And the Lord is being merciful to him. And he sort of blows it off, is what it sounds like. I said, I guess I blew it, but it's not going to affect me, so it's really okay. And we may think that. Now, as we get a little further along in the age span, we can find ourselves in the same situation, because we look at our society and we look at things going down the drain around us, and our response can be, well, I'm glad I'm going to be dead before everything gets as bad as it's going to get. Well, that's maybe putting it a little more bluntly than I probably should have put it, but isn't that kind of the reality? We can have that same kind of mentality. At least things are still reasonably tolerable in my day, even though I see them, but things are going at such a rate that we may still have to deal with it. And we have to think, well, is this a cop-out? Or is it just being positive? Is it cowardly escapism? Or is it some kind of wholesome gratitude? Well, it kind of depends on your attitude, your disposition, where we're coming from. We can be too short-sighted and focus only on, well, at least I'm not having to deal with this. Or we can think about what's the Lord's ultimate plan? What does he have in his thinking? So a couple of few things to note as we wrap up this section. The chronological relationships of the events of chapters 36 to 39 is not easy to sort out, but everything is sort of happening about this same time. And we can see this is a pivotal time, very significant in terms of the book, because it's right where we then move to a new section. And we'll see that next time as we look into that text. During this period, Hezekiah trusted God twice and failed to trust God once. That sound like kind of where we are sometimes? Maybe there's some lesson in that for us as well. When you think you stand, beware lest you fall. This should teach us that it is possible for a person to trust God in difficult circumstances and then turn around and trust in people and things with the next thing that comes along. And that's a reminder for us to maintain consistency in our trust of the Lord and maintain the relationship that we have with Him. And here's another observation. We should remember that Jesus did not take the short view. He was not being short-sighted, though he could have. When he was on the way to the cross, when he came to the Garden of Gethsemane and he prayed there, he could have said, Lord, you know, I've really come close to having to die, but, you know, it's just really not expedient for me to do that because, you know, it's going to hurt. And it's not going to be very pleasant. So I think I'm just going to skip it and let it go. Now, that would be tragic. He had the long view. He looked for what really ultimately needed to be done. And even though there were unpleasantries that he was going to have to face, he went to the cross for us. And we can trust in that provision that has been made for us. And so as we celebrate the Lord's table, we can be reminded that the Lord did not take a shortcut. He saw the big picture, and he was not short-sighted. He was long-sighted, and he provided the way for us.